The play begins in a sacred space. It could be a church, but more likely it is in the intimacy of the rectory, where this man of God is alone with his thoughts, with his prayers to Mother Mary, and with his heartache.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. You know, Mother, when you think of it, prayers and songs are more alike than not, aren't they? They're where we go when we're all alone in the dark, in our fear and in our hurt. They both bring us comfort, for a moment at least. Prayers and songs lift us out of our dirty work boots and help us forget our hunger. I'm sorry, Mother, I'm a bit out of sorts tonight and very tired. You see, I gave the last rites to a 7-year-old girl this evening. I gave the last rites to a 7-year-old girl. There, I said it out loud. Did you hear me, Mother? Don't those words sound queer, even as they come out of my mouth? So unnatural? The last rites? No, I gave First Communion to a 7-year-old girl. Yes, oh yes, that sounds much better. First Holy Communion, God bless her. The last rites? No, it can't be.
We're with the Reverend John J. Curran, a priest in Wilkes-Barre, as he wrestles with the injustices of the world, decrying the evils of the world, the evil in the human heart that would not only allow a child, the innocent ones, to die, but which would create structures that actually lead to such cruelties. So even though Father Curran is a good man, a holy man, a man of deep faith, he is called to do his work in a world of darkness, he would say, evil. This is the opening of a play titled For the Least of Them by K.K. Gordon, with Walt Mitchell here as Father Curran. We know writers say how hard it is to create a character who is good, because such characters tend to be a bit boring. But Gordon's Curran is a compelling character, and the story draws us in. K.K. Gordon has a gift for creating compelling characters, and we're about to meet a number of them who might be placed at the other end of the spectrum. The world of his new play is very dark, too, with, some might say, evil abroad. This time, many of the characters are matched with that milieu. But because of his ability to draw complex human beings in true-to-life situations, we'll go along for the journey, perhaps as readers of the Commedia willingly descend to Purgatorio, Purgatory, with their 14th-century Italian guides in that classic tale of lostness, darkness, and yes, redemption, a story we know so well. Mona Lisa and the Cross by K.K. Gordon will open this weekend in Scranton, presented by Diva Productions at the Old Brick Theater. Playwright K.K. Gordon, director Joe Rotura, and actor Regina Yeager-Drouse paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about this powerful story that has been 10 years in the making. K.K. Gordon.
It started as a challenge from my mentor, writing teacher, and friend, Charles Bennett. My grandmother became very ill, and I watched her for the last 2 years of her life full time. She had dementia, and the woman was the guiding star of my life. She raised me, basically, and I was watching her die. So the only chances I got to sneak out were to go to my writing lessons and to keep myself as positive as I could. I began writing short comedies and had a lot of success with it. And, you know, my teacher Chaz came to see an evening of my stuff, and I'd known him since second I graduated college. And he came up to me and he said, "Kid, I can tell you're having fun, but your voice is a playwright. It's dark and it's dramatic. I want you to write a play about a guy who's in love with a girl who won't stay with him unless he buys her drugs." And I said, "Okay, boss, no, I don't know anything about drugs." He goes, "I want you to think about it. I want you to think about it. This is where your voice belongs." And I took the bus home, and there was a man who had some sort of problems from Texas who really liked the shirt I was wearing. And he said, "Hey, buddy, I like that shirt. Why don't you take that shirt off and give it to me?" And I'm like, "Forget you, pal." And I am 6'7", and I know my way around an alley fight. And this guy was like 5'9", but really thought I was rude because I wouldn't take the shirt I was wearing off. They would kick me off the bus. And he became the first character in the play. And it's hard to discuss the 10 years, but that's how it started. And it was a challenge by, you know, a guy who is at least half responsible for the writer I've become.
Regina, what is your character like?
Watching this play come full circle, I have to say, wow, there are some places that you went really deep and dark, and you see characters making decisions and choices based on this one person who is addicted to heroin. And so my character is more of a supporting role in that I know what's going on. So my ex-husband, who is a famous photographer, I'm a professor at Brooklyn College, and several of my students, my ex-husband gets to look at their work. So in that way, he gets to meet also this heroin addict who is dating one of the students. So it's really, it's a message for our time, for sure. I think it's a great opportunity for anyone to see there is no holding back. There's the darkness, there's the drive of an addict who will do anything to get what they need and take down whoever they need to in their path. And then my character is the one saying, "I want you to send him away, the student, get him as far away from her as possible, and you have to stay away from her." And then, of course, none of that happens. But it is, it's the fast pace. It's what, two hours maybe at the
About
most?
About 2 hours, yeah.
You're watching, your mouth's open the whole time as you watch these characters come to life. And there are some brilliant characters and dark and interesting ones.
Is photography something that you're working with on a metaphorical level as well as just the fact that these are artists, who that's their medium?
It's somewhere between storytelling and inspiration. Once again, my teacher challenged me to write this, and no one believes me, but I've never taken an illegal drug in my life.
I could swear to that.
So I just have no, I'm a tough guy. I've been around the culture, but I never had experience with it. So he gave me this idea, and I had a guy who wanted to take my shirt. I knew I needed more. And right before I met Regina, I was the featured theatrical artist at Automatic in Washington, D.C. And it was amazing. It was like six floors of a hospital. They turned into art galleries and theaters and stuff like that. And part of what I had to do to make this happen was I had to do 18 hours of gallery sitting. And, you know, so I had to go back and forth from D.C. to Scranton. And I'm like, can I do it in one night? So for 24 hours, I watched this art gallery that was six floors long. And a hospital full of artists at 2 o'clock in the morning gets kind of crazy, as you can imagine. And I don't know what happened, but I was using the restroom and I found this amazing photograph. And it's a photograph that seemed like a Native American woman who was nude wearing a cross. And she looked like Mona Lisa to me. And Mona Lisa and the cross came from that photograph. So years earlier, wow, small world, Father Pickard, who helped me with the Father Curran play, he helped me get out of some trouble in my reckless youth by doing community service with a group he worked with called Farm Workers Opportunity. And there was a young woman named Mona Lisa who had gotten herself into some trouble where people in the migrant camp wanted her eliminated. And so that's where Mona Lisa, where she looked like, came from, and part of her beginning story. So like most things I've accomplished, it's all started with dumb luck.
Coney Island, wonderful choice for a place, but you reference Scranton in this play, too. Mm-hmm. What does Scranton say?
Well, I think there's a universality in it. A drug dealer or a heroin user or an artist can come from any area. I don't think it's indigenous to one area or another, but I think there's a universality to it about this idea of addiction, that even artists are addicted to art. Artists, a photographer can become addicted to his subject. Modigliani, I think, painted 17 nudes of the same woman in the same position. There's very little difference to it. Well, some artists, some photographers, look at Gordon Parks or Man Ray or Ann Leibovitz. They get right in there and they photograph, and they just don't stop photographing till they get what they want. Well, it's the same thing with a drug addict. Same thing with a heroin addict. You are always looking for your mother's kiss, I think is the term some heroin addicts use. That's what it feels like, and it's the same thing for any kind of artist. You're looking for that hit, that high. So in that case, I think it's universal.
You and KK just exchanged a glance there, Regina.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we always equate addiction as being a negative thing, obviously, you know, when it comes to drug use or any kind of abuse. But some people that are passionate about pursuing something, it definitely could have that same flavor to it. And I think, too, going back, too, to your question about the metaphor with photography, it's interesting when you think about how that picture came to you, KK, on your journey mm-hmm. in writing this, but it also was the catalyst for that relationship with all of them. Mm-hmm. Because what Vince was able to capture in the photo of Mona Lisa, Stuart is pursuing that and he can't find it. Mm-hmm. And so there's a reveal as part of the, you know, you don't want to give away everything, but it's just, that's really very interesting. And as he keeps working at it and working at it, just like the addictive nature that Joe was referring to, it's really interesting hearing that story of where you discovered the photo mm-hmm. and how that came to be and the pursuit of that, wanting to capture that same thing and not being able to do it.
Is it dark, dark, and darker, or are there moments of some kind of lightness?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, dealing with heroin and violence. But to me, as a writer, it's not darkness for darkness' sake. To me, mechanically, it's Pygmalion meets Pretty Woman and a Cinderella story thrown in there. So the horrible things with the heroin happen because that's what happens in the life. But they're not bad people. It's there's a love triangle that forces all the action. And I think I was very clever with this love triangle, because it's not two guys in love with the same woman. It's a woman who's in love with a guy who wants to be the guy who's in love with the girl's picture. And so I thought I was clever with that.
I think there is a relief, or not to say comic relief, but the language and how you capture some of the characters, like Gypsy Scotty. Mm-hmm. And so immediately the audience they'll get a charge out of that character, even though he is dark, and even in the other, in so many other ways. Mm-hmm. But there is a relief. So it's not just like you're going into this darkness and then you come out and you're like relieved to leave the theater. It'll be a journey, mm-hmm. I think, through that whole process and the highs and the lows, literally, of mm-hmm. that, you know, nature, the nature of the work.
And you suggested, Joe, that once we start, it goes. Mm-hmm. What are the challenges keeping a thoroughbred like this going to the finish line?
Well, I think what was made easy for all of us, myself, is it's written so well. There's a tightness to it. There's not one word in it that's superfluous, that doesn't belong in there. It's all character-driven. And I'm of the school of directing of give the actor their head. You know, let them take it where they want to take it. And then it's easier if they give you something and you pull back than if you keep throwing things at them. I want you to do this. I want you to do that. That's traffic cop directing. That's not directing. And for me, I let them do it and then try to give them a reason why they should take it a step further. Because I was the one who said the thing. This is like a mixed up Pygmalion, right? And all of a sudden that started something in me. And I had just said it. And then I started thinking about it. And then the one night you and I were talking and you said, the only one who really loves Mona Lisa is Rory. And I, wow, that didn't dawn on me. And then I went back to the script again and I start taking it apart word by word. Yeah, he's right. And that changes the dynamics of that one scene with Rory and Mona Lisa under the boardwalk. And, you know, I'm not dumb enough as a director to not get an idea every now and then. And sometimes you got to kick yourself and say, why didn't I see that in the beginning?
The character Rory is based on a gentleman who wanted to take the shirt off of me or else. And he's a really horrible guy, so I won't, my feelings won't get hurt if audience don't get that he's the one who really loves Mona Lisa. And he's from a place where people aren't necessarily well-educated. And I think he has issues. He has that sort of caveman constancy. It's like, you know, once I whack her on the head, she's mine. But I will take the best care of her I possibly can. And you know, I make no judgments. It's like just the way the guy came out. And I'm not saying it's a good thing, but I'm saying the love is real.
So even somebody like that, as you describe him, has a capacity for love, so is not irredeemable.
Some really bad guys in here, but there are no bad guys.
What's so magnetic? What's the attraction to Mona Lisa? Just the physical beauty? Or why are people fascinated by her?
That's a really great question. How Maddie plays Mona Lisa, there's vulnerability with her that I'm sure would be very appealing to all of the characters that she is involved with in the show. And then, of course, her need for drugs makes her indebted. So if you're kind of low self-esteem yourself, you know, I've got the money, you'll come with me. And so I think that, you know, each one, and Vince, you know, it's interesting. I don't know how she found Vince under the boardwalk.
He's a young photography student at Coney Island. There's a pretty Native American girl eating a hot dog. I'll give you $10 if you let me take your picture, and it starts from there.
When I was in photography school, the rule was go out and just start shooting. Doesn't matter what it is, doesn't matter where it is, doesn't matter what time of day it is, just start shooting. And that's the way I looked at it, as Vince trying to be a great photographer. You just go out and shoot everything. And there's always, out of 35, 60, or 100 photos, there's always one that's really magnetic, that everybody could look at and say, that's what it should be. That's what I want.
Regina, when you suggest, let's get away from him, let's get him away from her and her away from us, are you aware that it's not going to bear fruit, that this really may not end well?
I think that there's optimism that the advice will be taken. So, and there's some indication that Stuart, who plays her ex-husband, Jenny's ex-husband, is encouraging the boy to go away to college, to go to Northwestern, to get out of town. So that's really taking her advice. That gets misconstrued and becomes something else from those other two characters when they get that information. And Jenny knows Stuart well enough that she knows his drive and he wants that same experience. And so she tries to use an example saying, you're not going to get that because in her own way, that little alley cat loves Vincent, and you're not going to find that. So she knows him well enough to try to direct him, and then they have kind of this casual relationship afterwards that works for them, but she knows him well enough to try to direct him in that direction, and I think she may know that he still is going to go ahead with it. But get my boy out of town, my student out of town.
What became one of my favorite lines, and I liked it when I wrote it, but when you say it, it's sweet and clever poetry. When you say you have this horrible habit of mistaking little girls for angels. There's something, you know, he cannot see through the mystical beauty of her. You can, because same thing happened when he fell in love with you once upon a time. Mm-hmm. But I just love the way you deliver that line. Mm-hmm.
Is it a line that you were aware that KK?
I didn't know that you felt that way about it, but it is, that is a beautiful scene that I love every one of those lines in that effort to convince him, and also the emotional path that my character goes on, and just for saying, remember when you looked at me that way and I felt that and you got that from me in our relationship, you can't get that from her. And so she's using those examples. So it's really beautiful, heartfelt scene between a couple that shares quite a history. Mm-hmm. And she's very protective of that.
What about Korea and the military thread?
Oh, Stuart is, he's a world-class photographer, but he comes from a military background. And probably a very rugged upbringing. So the man is as British a gentleman as I can make him, but he is also tough as rocks. And as a young man, he was in the Falkland Islands and took a picture of a man as he was being bayoneted. And that's where the man's career began. Everything, the soldier drives everything he does, I think, in his artwork, he's very precise and there's an attack to it. There's not a lot of whims, probably wouldn't be a lot of whimsy in his work. And he's drawn to jaguars. He's done commercial photography. He's done fashion photography. He's done nature photography. And he's at a point where he doesn't have to prove anything. And I think he would be very, very happy if he could spend the rest of his career in South America taking pictures only of jaguars. And I think he would see a warrior nature in these animals, in a wild nature. In the play, he has a way of finding the jaguar in everyone. And I think some of this out, a lot of it, I just get lucky with.
You said the word, and we know it to be true, and we know it to be true of you, KK, that it isn't darkness for darkness' sake. What do we take away in 2019 when we go to a place like this? Joe, what do you think?
I think there's redemption for everybody. No matter how dark, no matter how deep the sin, no matter how it's committed. And that's what really attracted me to the play. I do believe that there's a redemption for Mona Lisa, which we show a little bit at the end. But I want the audience to make that determination. Has she been brought back? Has she been redeemed or not? And what about Stuart? All right, because I wanted there to be a symbiosis between his and her redemption. So I want the audience to think about that. And again, I don't want to hit him in the head with a hammer and say, this is what it is, this is what it is. No, you think for yourself. I'm one of these directors who I don't like going to a show and having it all spelled out for me. I admire directors who could do it. I'm not one of them. But on the other hand, it gives the audience a chance to engage with the play, which I think is missing from a lot of theater. I'm one of these people who's not a big fan of the Disneyfication of Broadway. I really think it's candy. It's mind candy, that there are very few serious plays. I come from the background of working off-Broadway. We were doing everything. We were working in places like Intar, the old Harold Clurman Theater, Theater 22, Theater for a New City, places like that. We had playwrights coming out the door, and we were trying to do all different types of plays. You don't see as much of that anymore as you used to, because you don't have the venue to do it. And also, NEA grants are very hard to come by anymore. State grants are very hard to come by also, unless you're an established artist. So something like this, a play like this, is going to engage the audience for the 2 hours.
Yeah, I think it's great that, Joe, you used the word redemption, because I feel that they feel the same way. I echo that entirely. And I think it's a great message, because we are faced with the worst epidemic of heroin usage in Pennsylvania and countrywide. And so when you see that this person makes these choices and how it impacts the people they encounter, but then for her future, you get a sense of that at the end. So I think the great takeaway is that there's tremendous art happening in our area, and you will leave with an experience that you will talk about and think about for days after. And not a lot of shows do that. But you'll think, wow, I didn't expect that to happen at all. Like there are some surprises in this, and it's thought-provoking.
That's your hope, is it, KK?
My only message, I think, is there's still hope. That simple.
Playwright KK Gordon, actor Regina Yeager-Drouse, and director Joe Rotura speaking with us about Mona Lisa and the Cross, an original drama by KK Gordon, presented by Diva Productions this weekend and next. There are shows March 1st, 2nd, 8th, and 9th at 8 o'clock each night, and Sundays March 3rd and 10th at 2. The Old Brick Theater is the site, 126 West Market Street in Scranton. As you can tell, the play is for mature audiences. You can find them on Facebook, or you may call area code 570-209-7766. Diva Productions presents Mona Lisa and the Cross, an original drama by K.K. Gordon, Friday and Saturday, this Friday and Saturday, and the following Friday and Saturday, March 1st and 2nd, 8th and 9th at 8 o'clock each night, and Sundays, March 3rd and the 10th at 2 p.m., Sunday matinees at 2, at the Old Brick Theater, 126 West Market Street in Scranton. You can find them on Facebook. For reservations and information, 570-209-7766. And again, the play is for mature audiences.